Picture this. You're driving down the highway, maybe doing 70. And in that moment, you have two completely contradictory demands for the car you're in.
Right.
First, you need it to be light. You want fuel efficiency, nimble handling. You're not looking to drive a tank.
Of course, efficiency is everything in the modern market.
But God forbid, the second you hit something, all those rules flip upside down. You don't care about gas mileage. You want a fortress. You want this unyielding cage of metal that just absorbs the impact.
And that's the paradox, isn't it? It's asking a material to be two opposite things at the same time.
It's exactly the paradox we're diving into today. And we've got a really fascinating source to guide us. It's a master's thesis from 2011 by Yoon Soo Jung at Pohang University of Science and Technology.
The title is a bit of a mouthful: Spot Weldability of Trip Steel with High Carbon, High Aluminium Content.
It sounds dense.
It is, but the mission here is huge. It's about a new recipe for steel that tries to cheat the laws of physics. It involves swapping out a standard ingredient for something you'd usually find in your kitchen.
Aluminium.
Aluminium. But the real problem, and this is the core of Jung's thesis, isn't just making the super metal. It's that when you try to actually build a car with it, it tends to just snap apart at the seams.
Right, because you can have the strongest material in the world, but if you can't weld it together, it's just a pile of very expensive scrap.
Exactly.
So let's start with the metal itself. The thesis calls it trippy steel. TRIP. I'm guessing it's not steel that goes on vacation.
Huh, no. It stands for transformation-induced plasticity. It's a type of advanced high-strength steel. And its magic trick is that it literally changes its internal structure while it's being crushed.
Okay, walk me through that. What's happening on a microscopic level?
So steel usually has a pretty standard crystal structure at room temperature, but trip steel is designed to hold on to a high temperature phase called austenite.
Austenite. That's usually only stable when the steel is like glowing red hot, right?
Yeah, precisely. We manipulate the chemistry to trap it at room temperature. It's called retained austenite. Now, here's the cool part. When the car crashes, when that metal gets stressed, that trapped austenite suddenly snaps into a different, much harder phase called martensite.
And martensite is the really, really hard stuff.
It's like a ceramic. So imagine a suit of armor that's flexible, but the instant a sword hits it, that spot turns to diamond. That transformation absorbs a huge amount of energy.
That makes perfect sense for safety. It hardens during the crash. But if it's already so great, why did this thesis need to be written?
Because of the recipe. To keep that austenite trapped, you need stabilizers. The standard industry recipe uses carbon, manganese, and a lot of silicon.
Silicon, like in computer chips.
The very same. In steel, it acts as a cementite inhibitor. It basically stops the carbon from forming useless little clumps, keeping it free to do its job. It works great for the physics, but for the manufacturing plant, silicon is a complete disaster.
Why? What's the problem?
It makes it impossible to rust proof. You know, car bodies are galvanized, dipped in liquid zinc.
Yeah, to stop rust. That's standard.
Well, silicon migrates to the surface of the steel and forms these complex oxides. It acts like a nonstick coating on a frying pan. The zinc just rolls right off.
So you get a car that can survive a massive crash, but it rusts away in a few years.
A total deal breaker for the industry. So, material scientists started looking for a substitute, something that did silicon's job, but without that nasty side effect.
And that's where aluminium comes in.
Aluminium is the big contender. It does the job and it doesn't mess with galvanizing nearly as much.
Okay, so just swap silicon for aluminium. Problem solved. The thesis title suggests it's not that simple. High
Yeah.
carbon, high aluminium.
It's not. When you start adding a lot of aluminium, we're talking 3, 4, even 5%, which is massive for steel, you trigger a really weird side effect. You stabilize a phase called delta ferrite.
I've heard of ferrite. That's just the basic iron structure,
Yeah,
right?
normal ferrite, yes. But delta ferrite is a high temperature ghost. It's the first thing that forms when molten steel solidifies. But as it cools, it's supposed to transform into other things. It's supposed to disappear.
But it doesn't.
With enough aluminium, it refuses to transform. It stays in the final microstructure at room temperature, like a ghost of the molten state.
And having a ghost in your material sounds bad. Usually that's where cracks start.
That's what you'd think. But the bet here is that this ghost, this delta ferrite, might actually be the hero when we get to the biggest hurdle of all, the welding.
Which is the entire focus here.
Yeah.
Because a car isn't one solid block of steel.
It's thousands of sheets held together by spot welds. A typical car has, what, 3,000 to 5,000 of them?
I've seen the robots do it in factories. It looks violent.
It is. Resistance spot welding is brutal. You clamp two sheets between copper electrodes, blast a huge current through them, the resistance melts the steel, and it forms a little fused nugget.
And then it cools down instantly.
Instantly. The electrodes are water-cooled. And I think you see where this is going. If you take this complex high-alloy steel, melt it, and then flash freeze it.
You ruin the delicate recipe.
You completely ruin it. The molten pool quenches into almost 100% martensite.
To hard, brittle stuff.
The ceramic. So now you have these amazing, flexible steel sheets held together by tiny buttons of glass.
And in a crash, the sheets don't tear. The buttons just pop off.
Exactly. It's called interfacial fracture, a catastrophic failure. What you want is for the weld to be so strong that the metal around it tears. We call that a plug fracture.
The glue has to be stronger than the paper.
Perfect. And with these steels, that's the nightmare. The welds are just too brittle.
So the hypothesis is that this ghost, the Delta Ferrite, will somehow survive the welding inferno.
That's the hope. Delta Ferrite is soft. If it survives inside the weld nugget, it can act like a shock absorber. It breaks up that solid, brittle block of martensite.
Okay, so let's get to the experiment. How did they test this idea?
They made four different recipes. A 2x2 matrix, two levels of carbon 0.3 and 0.4%, and two levels of aluminium, which they called LA for low aluminium, and HA for high aluminium.
What were the actual numbers for low and high?
Low was about 3.5% aluminium. High was over 5.5.
So even the low is pretty high for steel.
Oh, absolutely. And before they even welded anything, they ran computer simulations thermocalc, and the models predicted a clear split. The low aluminium alloys, the Delta Ferrite would vanish, but the high aluminium ones, the ghost would stay.
And they prepped the metal first, right? Some kind of heat treatment.
Correct. Intercritical annealing. It's like proofing the dough. You heat it just right to get the perfect mix of phases in the base metal to set it up for that Chirai-P effect.
So the stage is set. We've got our alloys. And now for the welding. But they didn't just plug it into the wall. They compared AC versus DC.
Alternating current versus direct current. Yeah, this is a big deal in manufacturing.
I know AC comes out of the outlet and DC is from a battery. Why would a welding robot care?
It's all about heat and oxides. AC current flips back and forth, right? So 60 times a second, the current actually hits zero.
The heat flickers.
It's a pulsed heat, yes. DC is a constant flow, so you'd think DC is more efficient. But AC has a secret weapon, the thesis points out.
Which is?
It's better at breaking the crust. Remember all that aluminium? It forms aluminium oxide on the surface, which is an electrical insulator, a ceramic shield.
So if you can't get the current through the shield, you can't make heat.
And you can't weld. The study found that AC was way better at shattering that oxide layer. Those voltage spikes in each cycle act like a little jackhammer. DC is smoother, so it struggles to punch through.
That's a great practical insight. It's not just about what's inside the metal, but how you get through the skin.
And once they got through, they mapped out the lobe curves.
Lobe curve. Sounds technical.
It's just the operating window, a graph of current versus time. Too low, your weld is too small. Too high, you get expulsion.
That sounds messy.
It is. The molten metal literally explodes out from between the sheets, sprays everywhere. You're left with a crater. The lobe is that safe zone in the middle.
And did the high aluminium change that safe zone?
It shifted it. These alloys have higher electrical resistance, so they heat up much faster. They found they actually needed less current than for plain old mild steel.
Interesting. Okay, but let's get to the main event. They sliced the welds open. Did the ghost survive? Was the Delta Ferrite there?
The results were crystal clear. When they put the high aluminium samples, the 3HA and 4HA, under the microscope, there it was, bands of Delta Ferrite running right through the weld nugget.
It survived the melt.
It did. The high aluminium content stabilized it just enough that it reformed even during that incredibly rapid cooling. It couldn't all turn into martensite.
And how did that affect the physical properties? Did it make the nugget less brittle?
The hardness tests proved it. Usually the center of the weld is the hardest point. But in the HA alloys, the hardness in the nugget was significantly lower. That soft Delta Ferrite was doing its job, acting as a relaxant.
So the million-dollar question. When they pulled the welds apart, did they get the good fracture or the bad one?
The flexure modes told the whole story. The low aluminium alloys, where the ghost disappeared, they failed mostly by interfacial fracture.
The button popped off. The bad one.
The bad one. But the high aluminium alloys showed a much, much higher tendency for plug fracture. The weld held, and the sheet metal around it tore. The ductility was way up.
So the hypothesis was right. The Delta Ferret ghost solves the brittle weld problem.
It really seems to. But they didn't stop there. They tried one more thing. A post-weld heat treatment.
You mean they put the weld in an oven?
Something much faster. Right there on the robot. After the main welding pulse, the machine pauses for a fraction of a second and then sends a second lower pulse of current through the same spot.
Like a little finishing zap?
Think of it more like a massage. The weld is full of stress from being melted and frozen. That second pulse just warms it up enough to temper the martensite to let it relax a little bit.
And did it work?
It made things even better. It lowered the hardness in the weld zone even more, improving the toughness. It suggests car factories could just update their software to add this double pulse and make these steels even safer.
That is just incredible, the level of complexity that goes into sticking two bits of metal together.
It's not just glue anymore. These are complex composite materials that just happen to be made of steel.
So if we zoom out, what's the big takeaway here?
The big takeaway is that we can solve the paradox. We don't have to choose between safety and efficiency. Jung's work shows that by embracing the weirdness of high aluminum steel, we can get the strength we need and solve the brittle weld problem that's plagued these materials.
So, lighter cars, better gas mileage, but still a fortress in a crash. And they won't rust out because we've kicked the silicon habit.
That's the promise. But there was one final thought in the conclusion that I found really provocative.
Go on.
He mentions that our standard engineering rules for safety might be out of date. Specifically, the formula for minimum nugget size.
There's a formula for how big the weld needs to be.
For decades, it's 4 times the square root of the sheet thickness, 4√T. It's been the Bible. It tells inspectors, if the weld is this big, it's safe.
And Jung is saying that's wrong.
He's suggesting it might not be enough anymore. That for these advanced steels, a weld that passes the size test might still fail brittly. The material has evolved faster than the math we use to check it.
That's a little bit terrifying. We're building with 21st century materials and checking them with 20th century rules.
It's the question every engineer should be asking. Are our standards actually standard anymore?
Well, on that slightly unsettling note, next time you slam your car door, think about the little ghost holding it all together. Thanks for taking this deep dive.
My pleasure. Drive safe.